review of the strategic issues that come from the SONA. Of course, they will be built into the strategy document of the department, but they're making a presentation today because it is important for us when we debate in the House in response to the State of the Nation address, we have the issues that emanate directly from the department. Pumla is indicating that Mr. Chetelo and Mr. Ndapane have expressed apologies. And the whip is leaving early because she's going to the university to be a student again. And when she leaves, we would need Mazibuko and Ms. Carter to be present. She won't leave before. You can't leave the meeting without a quorum. You are a whip of this committee. Otherwise, you must hire a taxi to take you to the university. If you can't catch the bus. I am telling you, I'm not asking. Teaching?
Thank you very much, Chairperson, honorable members of the Portfolio Committee on Rural Development, ladies and gentlemen. I'd like to begin, Chairperson, by expressing my sincerest heartfelt apologies for the headaches I caused your office towards arranging this meeting. It's all part of the teething problems I'm experiencing as I am holding the fort for the DG, Umdu Shubane, who is recuperating at home right now. The presentation indeed seeks to give a more in-depth outline of one of the five priorities of government, which is rural development linked to land reform and food security, which has been identified along all the other priorities of government, creation of decent work and sustainable livelihoods, education, health, and the fight against crime and corruption. This presentation outline is going to deal with the specific outcome that we are handling out of the 12 outcomes of government. Outcome 7, we will give an overview of the comprehensive rural development program that the President mentioned. What it entails, what the processes of the Comprehensive Rural Development Programs are. We will share with the committee what we have done, where we've gone with the CRDP to date, its rollout plan, and deal with the National Rural Youth Service Corps that the President mentioned, the Recapitalization and Development Program, and spend some time dealing with the very important aspect of job creation. Outcome 7, Chairperson, which is the marching orders that we are following, has got five fundamental outputs that need to be realized. First of which is sustainable agrarian reform with thriving farming sector. We are involved here as a tripartite group of government departments, rural development, the Department of Water Affairs, Environment, Department of Agriculture, Forestry and Fisheries. The second output is that of improved access affordable and diverse food. DAF is a leader in this output, the third of which is improved services to support livelihoods. Department of Transport and all those departments, public works and municipalities, are the main actors there. The fourth output that we seek to realize, Chairperson, is that of rural jobs creation, the promotion of economic livelihoods in rural areas, the fifth of which is enabling institutional environment for sustainable and inclusive growth. COCTA there, economic development, and ourselves are the main leaders there. There is a sixth one, which cuts across dealing with issues of institutional support. That's why it is being led there by DPSA and the Presidency, together with National Treasury. The overall aim is that of realizing the vision of vibrant, sustainable, equitable rural communities and food security for all. This particular slide, Chairperson, gets now deeper into the detail. The outputs are there. The value chain of vibrant and sustainable, equitable rural communities and food security for all bolsters all of these. The drivers in each of the outputs, the first one of agrarian reform, the driver there is farming. In the second one of improved access to diverse and affordable food, food security is the driver there. In the third one of improved rural services to support sustainable livelihoods, infrastructure and the delivery of services is key. In the improvement of employment opportunities, jobs together with skilling people to be effective in those jobs is the driver there. In the enabling institutional environment, good governance is the driver there. The outputs are clarified and summarized there on the third row: land, water, markets, labor, inputs, and it goes down to agro-processing in the second one, agro-logistics in the third one, driven by infrastructure, social and economic infrastructure being provided, and in the fourth one, job creation being the key, looking at the development of enterprises and various agro-industries in villages, bolstered by training. Around good governance, we're looking at building local institutions. Institutions would also involve building credit institutions, socio-political institutions. We're talking there of community-based organizations and the houses of traditional leaders represented in each and every community. The activities on the fifth row really are quite clear: identifying, acquiring, warehousing, selecting, leasing, supporting, securing the land that is needed to make that farming possible, surveying it, making sure that there's registrations, and coming up with special plans and other development plans around that. All of these outputs have got specific activities and responsible departments, as I've outlined in the bubbles. The comprehensive rural development has got three fundamental phases. First of which is that of meeting basic human needs. Second of which is moving towards large-scale infrastructure development. The third of which is ensuring that small, micro, and medium enterprises and village markets are put in place. These happen, Chairperson, both simultaneously and sequentially. If we go to a village in Gandulia and we find out there is an enterprise here that needs to be developed, we're not going to wait until we get to phase two. We will give it attention while we are meeting the basic needs in phase one. Hence, I say it is happening both simultaneously and sequentially. The comprehensive rural development program has got a management system that is headed by the Minister of Rural Development in letter form as a champion nationally. In the provinces, The political champion is the office of the premier, but the technical champion in each and every province are the MECs that have been assigned to deal with rural development. In each and every province, the MEC for agriculture is tasked to also deal with agrarian development or agriculture. The only province where this was an exception was in the Free State. Until about 2 weeks ago, we received a message that it's no longer under the Department of Public Works, but is now under the Department of Agriculture. In the municipalities, the mayors of the district are the champions on the third sphere of the Comprehensive Rural Development Program. And then, nearer to the people in the wards, we work around what is called the Council of Stakeholders, which brings together organs of civil society, organs of government, business, cooperatives, beneficiaries themselves, workers, community development workers, and the traditional leaders that are at that local level of government. We are ensuring that households are grouped in such a manner that they will send Representative Jefferson here. We are going back to the times of street committees where households are grouped, anything from 20 to 30, so that they send street by street representatives so that their voices are heard in the Council of Stakeholders where projects are being discussed. Because we're looking at achievement of social cohesion and developing people according to their voices. A variety of issues are discussed. Food issues, health issues, education issues, economic growth, social cohesion, development, so that people themselves can feel satisfied that their voices is heard as we roll out. Where have we been so far? There are provinces in which we have had in the past 13, 14 months pilots. Limpopo, we have been working at the villages of Muyeshe, Tomo, Ngonono, and Ningamanzi. These are wards 18, 17, 3, and 4. In the Northern Cape, we've been in the far flung settlement of Rimfa Smak, which is one of our restitution sites. In the Sianda district, in Bomalanga, we started at Mkondo, wards 1 and 2, Emaashini, Jabulani, Bafazi, Kwangema, and in Dongerhoek in the northwest. In Mokgalaneng, Tisake, and Matlametong in ward 29. In the Free State, we're in Diatalawa, Makhulukwe village, and in Jakobstal in the Southern Free State, wards 1 and 4. Makhulukwe is what, I think it's ward 4, and in Jakobstal is ward 1. In KwaZulu-Natal, we are in Msinga and in Vryheid, wards 6, 7, 8, and 9, wards 5, 6, and 7 in Vryheid. In the Western Cape, we are in the settlement of Dayselsdorp and just outside the city of Cape Town, in a more rural settlement of Mamre. In the Eastern Cape, we started in Mson. In Mson, is composed of Kumbu and Tsolo. And you know, on the Tsolo side, we were in the village of Mkobiso and Nombohelana, ward 2. And in Kumbu, we were in Ngakolo and Mkuno, ward 13. Jefferson, during this, the 2010-11, the CRDP wards have then been expanded in all of the provinces. Limpopo, Makutu Tamaha, Fidahomo, Northern Cape, Mushawineng and Sianuma, Bumalanga and Kondo, Komaz Tembisile and Albert Lutuli. Northwest, we are busy in Ratlou and Greater Taung in the Free State, Maluja Pofung, Lihlareng. In KZN, we're expanding to Mzimkulu, Ingwe and Inganja. In the Western Cape, we expand to Matsikama, Beaufort West, Bito, and in Wurzenberg, around Ceres. In the Eastern Cape, we're expanding to King Sabata Dalingyebo, Ekaugeni, Ntabangulu, Nasenyandeni. In Gauteng, Semogale, Ngungwini Municipality, Midfall, and in at Lesedi District, Lesedi Municipality. Now, There's approximately just over 3,000 rural wards in South Africa. The CRDP will be rolled in all rural municipalities, so that together with municipalities we are agreed about which wards are privatized. By January 2012, we would have reached over 180 wards through the NARISEC program, using young people, the unemployed young people in these villages, entering with them each and every home to get a baseline information about the diseases, about the unemployment, about the hardships in each and every home. We are going to get all of this data, this baseline information, through the NISIS program, which is a national integrated social information system. We train these young people first, together with all of the government departments in a district, so that when we enter into the homes, we enter the homes as government from all three spheres. Currently, we're developing a framework for norms and standards of service delivery in rural areas. In other words, if we are going to build a road, we sit with the Department of Transport and say, what would be an adequate road? Because we are dedicated to paving rural streets so that abandoned don't walk to school on mud and crossing dangerous rivers to get to school. We need to develop standards. If we are going to build a bridge for crossing a river to school, what is the norm? What is the standard around that? I want to get now deeper, Chairperson, to give more information to what the President has shared with us. The National Rural Youth Service Corps, which is really more than a youth empowerment program. It is a program that is targeting youth in rural areas of South Africa. In each ward, when we piloted this program, we recruited four young people, three plus one, the one being a young person with some kind of disability. These are to be employed for a period of no less than 2 years. In fact, the 2 years is only an initial period of just building the skills. Skills development will include making sure that these young people are exposed to a process of disciplining them. It begins, for instance, as we speak now, there's 500 of these young people who are at the Terbrug military base. They are being trained really to take instructions. They are being trained to be able to take instructions and implement those instructions. Fitness is being provided there to make sure that they are fit mentally, morally, and physically. We're looking at instilling a sense of patriotism. We're developing life skills, such as the simple thing of being able, ubulisa, greeting, rights, awareness training. Specific skills then will follow in the process of empowering them to become agents of rural change. This particular slide, Chairperson, begins to give the entire framework. We recruited these young people. We advertised publicly in newspapers, in community radios, asking them to apply. We involved municipalities in selecting them, in enrolling them, and then there was a process of getting the mayors, the minister, the premiers to formally welcome these young people who have qualified into this program. It was a very painful exercise. We wanted at least 1,500 in each. We received over 60,000 of these applications. There was an overwhelming response in the country. The second stage in this phase was that of these young people reporting into NARISEC for orientation. What we did here is we were exposing them to a variety of government department speakers to tell them how government works. How government works. And what it is that government wants to realize in as far as social transformation. The next phase here is that of exposing them to do the community service. One of the things that we're going to be doing with them is we're going to be exposing them to doing a door-to-door profiling of their own rural areas using the NISIS. It's an electronic system, the National Integrated Social Information System, so they can understand what is going on in each and every home doing the household profiling. After that, these young people will be then exposed to a variety of vocational skills development, such as training in health, training in agriculture, emergency services, a variety of trades. And then will come the finishing stage, leveling, so that they can make sure if we are going to be training somebody and is going to become a hairdresser must be able to run his own books, able to work with people. That's why basic skills like the administration is important. How to administer the project. How to keep the books of the business. Because what we want to do is not just that at the last stage they must go in and apply for jobs. We want these young people themselves to become not just a job seekers, but a job givers in their own right. We want to use them as instruments for creating a job. Here is an update of what we have achieved so far in the National Rural Youth Service Corps. We have completed the two-week training program for 600 of these young people through various FET colleges in just this province of the Western Cape. We were struggling in getting other FETs in other colleges to respond with the speed in which we are rolling out this. The South African National Defence Force has signed with us an implementation protocol. As we speak, exactly 500 young people have reported in the Debrug military base just outside Bloemfontein on the 30th of January, where they are getting a variety of these skills. A sad thing that has happened there is we've had to return some young people because they were not fit to be part of the program, in other words, physically. The Minister of the HET department has responded to our request for funding. He's really assisted us. Port Utebrug in the military base has asked us to make sure that there are some facilities that are actually revived to be able to receive this large group of young people. The Free State was lagging behind together with KwaZulu-Natal. We're glad that on the 1st of February, they have also welcomed the first intake of 358 young people. There are further events that are going to be happening on the 1st of March and on the 1st of April. These are the figures, Chairperson, province by province. In Limpopo, over 1,300. In Mpumalanga, just over 1,000. KwaZulu-Natal, we are struggling, but the Premier is really helping us there to get this program on the road. In the Northwest, close to 1,000. In the Free State, that's the number I mentioned. In the Western Cape, over 700 young people have been recruited who are in the program. In the Northern Cape, 800. In the Eastern Cape is the largest intake of just over 1,500. The total to date is 7,832. We're hoping then by the end of March, when the KwaZulu-Natal has been on board, that would have just reached over 9,000 of these young people, because we want to use them to do the door-to-door profiling of each and every home in the rural areas. An important program mentioned by the President is that of recapitalization and development. To respond to the challenges of the collapsing land reform projects and defunct irrigation schemes in the former homelands, as well as distressed farms by private individuals, the Department has introduced a new program that has been coined Recapitalization and Development. The core principles of the program is that of mentoring, co-management, and share equity, making sure that we are providing land reform beneficiaries with skilled people to guide them from productivity to management of the farm up to the marketing of the product. The object is that of increasing production to guarantee food security, to drive farmers into commercial farmers, and the creation of employment opportunities in agriculture. To implement this program, the department has set aside 25% of the baseline from the land acquisition budget. This amounts to 900 million so far for this 2010-11 financial year. The progress to date in this recapitalization program, that 467 projects currently under this program. The department, in collaboration with the Department of Agriculture, Fisheries and Forestry, Department of Foreign Affairs, as well as provincial departments, led by the Department of Agriculture and district municipality, are working on assisting 9 defunct irrigation schemes in the country, such as Ngoha and Taung. The department, together with the land bank, have identified 119 distressed farms owned by private individuals that are going to benefit. The delivery agreements, province by province, is listed in this scheme, Chairperson, in the Eastern Cape, for instance, around the year 2011 and 2012, we're going to be reining in on Ngoha Irrigation Scheme, Kamada Irrigation Scheme, and then we are going to go this next year to Ebilaje, not Dilaje, that's a mistake, they pardon us, Ebilaje, and then we're going to move to Ezanyokwe around 2013 and 2014. Then in Free State, Orange River Irrigation Scheme, going to Leo River, Kalfontein, Van der Kloof, ending with Witwatersrand, Caledon River Irrigation Scheme, the Modder Rivier. In KwaZulu-Natal, it's going to be Makatini Flats Irrigation Scheme, Msinga Irrigation Scheme, Muden Irrigation Scheme, finishing with Bululuana, Together Ferry, and Indumo. In Mpumalanga, Piva Irrigation Scheme, followed by Masisizane. In Northwest, as I've mentioned, we're going to begin with Itaung Irrigation Scheme. In Northern Cape, the Falhart, Serimpopo, Mapela Irrigation Scheme. There's no irrigation scheme in Gauteng, no irrigation scheme in the Western Cape. Now, this just repeats those irrigation schemes. I'm going to skip it. We have set, as various branches in the department, and we have workshopped where the specific areas for job creation are in the department. Narisek is going to be the lead zone for job creation. We are confident that to Narisek, in the 2011-2012, we will definitely be reaching over 7,000 jobs. Another area where we are definite about the creation of jobs is in the strategic land acquisition. Now, I know that we are fighting with some of our colleagues, for instance, the DDG for land reform. Some of us are saying, for each and every hectare, we want you to tell us how many jobs are going to be created. If we are going to be doing maize, for instance, how many jobs can we expect from 1 kilo an hectare of maize? If there was a Dabi, how many jobs can we create? And what kind of jobs? Temporary? How decent are they going to be? So we are refining those intricacies in as far as job creation. Another very solid area for job creation is in this recapitalization and development program. Because when we provide the grant for the improvement of a farm, we want to improve it so that it can also become a vehicle for the creation of jobs. In the revitalization of irrigation schemes also, one of the criteria for help is one to see in the business plan, commodity by commodity, how many jobs are going to be realized in there. We're not going to approve jobs, these projects, if they're not grounding us in this big search for jobs. In the rollout of infrastructure, whether we are building streets or bridges, whether we are fencing or paving, we want the business plan to have jobs. In enterprise development, for instance, as we're using NARISEC, when we are foolproof and are going to fund a business plan, we want to make sure how many jobs are going to be involved. A big opportunity for us is that of raising internships and learnerships in the department. Each and every branch, each and every chief directorate has been required to tell us exactly how many interns, how many learners can be brought in. As people are rural areas. They come in and they help us on our CRTV sites as interns and in learnerships. We are focusing on the filling in of vacant funded posts. Each and every branch has been requested to give solid indications as the program of filling in those posts. This goes, Chairperson, into the details of output by output. I'm not going to repeat this, I've already covered it. Suffice to say that in the first output of strategic land reform interventions, the following is going to be done. We're going to acquire land, we're going to warehouse that land, making sure that it is strategically located for farming. In other words, the Department of Agriculture, for instance, has told us they are developing hubs all over. The Gauteng Department of Provincial Agriculture, for instance, have divided the whole of Gauteng into specific hubs. There's a hub for hybrid products such as flowers. There's a hub for mbona, maize. There's a hub for specific commodities. When we acquire farms anywhere in Gauteng, we're going to follow that route so that we acquire farms that are going to really be aligned to those specific hubs. That's what we mean then by making sure that we go for strategically located land. We're going to be very strict in the selection of farmers in line with the categories of their needs. That's why we are warehousing these farms, so that we sift the beneficiaries. In the Recapitalization Development Program, to support land reform projects acquired since 1994. We're going back because we've made blunders. We realized that we were not careful in the selection. We did not give farmers the support that they deserved. This is why now in the CRTB program, we will profile each and every farmer. What are the skills? What are the needed skills development programs, farmer by farmer? Taking each farmer through the skilling program, making sure that they are able to run the farm, human resources management, budgeting, and everything. Land acquisition and recapitalization is going to be integrated. No use for us giving out farms and there's no access to water in all of this. In the second output, as we said, focusing on irrigation schemes, making sure that we are establishing not just household gardens, but institutional gardens. Chairperson, in this output number two, of really making sure that we are bolstering food security, every household in rural areas that has got a demonstrated passion for uveza ukutya farming is going to be assisted, every home, to produce. Because we want to use not just the fallow lying gardens. In the Eastern Cape, for instance, we've got good information. An average garden is about 2,300 square meters. That's huge. Some range 500 square meters of a garden. We are going to buy this food from households. We're going to be asking churches, NGOs that have got access to land, to collaborate with us. One of the things we are going to be doing, for instance, is making sure that the gardens at schools, the gardens at churches in rural areas are used to bolster food security. We're going to provide inputs, mechanization, farming infrastructure to help in production on these household gardens and institutional gardens. We're going to make sure that there is processing. Our infrastructure department, together with the Department of Agriculture, are going to be involved in making sure that there are silos built there. In Diadalawa, for instance, we are harvesting for the first time over 418 hectares of wheat from a community. We have had to ask UAFGRI to provide us with a space for storing near 1,000 tons of wheat. We're looking at the building of abattoirs, pack houses, agri-villages, building stock water dams. In output three, we're facilitating the coordination of social infrastructure such as water, sanitation, energy, waste removal, provision of e-reps, libraries, village viewing areas. We are glad that in over 25 sites, various communities in the villages were able to watch all of the 2010 Soccer World Cup matches. They are also going to be able to watch the World Cup of Cricket that is currently going on in India. They've also participated in watching the president live as he delivered the sauna. Facilitation and coordination, provision, revitalization of roads, as I said, streets, Mvezo, for instance, we're making sure that there's going to be a bridge, housing, we're mobilizing labor, capital to partnership to effect all of the above. In the fourth output, innovation is key. Appropriate technology around sanitation. Over 300 houses, for instance, in a variety of homes in our pilot have been installed with the solar power. Water purification is going to be a focus so that we can avoid a variety of diseases. Training skills is the key. NARISEC, as I said, is going to be a lead in job creation. In the fifth output, stakeholders are going to become an anchor to making sure that before any project is approved by the department, before we fund any project, every home would have known about that project. So I'm not surprised to find out, hey, what's happening in our villages? We don't know about this. The Council of Stakeholders, chaired by a person representing the whole community, together with the municipality, watch committees, are going to approve projects before they are delivered, so that each and every project is delivered according to the specifications of the rural people. We are going to make sure that we are facilitating access to great facilities, establishment of building of institutions such as the FHEs are going to be helping us here, tertiary institutions, and labor is going to be helping us. Now, in the coordination of our work in rural areas, the department, over and above the role of being a catalyst, a facilitator, and an implementer, we are going to be playing a huge role in Outcome 7, in making sure that all of the 15 departments that we are working with us, talk to communities, and we're delivering according to the voice of the communities. The government footprint in all rural wards in the countryside is going to be well coordinated. Experience has shown that there is money available in a variety of government departments for rural development to make meaningful change in people's lives, but coordination at municipal level remains very weak at this stage. Hence, district municipalities have been brought in by the minister in what used to be a MINMEC. They are now part of the executive implementation forum under Outcome 7. Outcomes 4, 5, and 7, and 10 are to align with their priorities and define them especially for effective implementation, coordination, and monitoring. There's work that must still be done. Completion of the institutionalization of the delivery agreement across all the spheres of government. We must sign with mayors. We have signed with just about all the national ministers in the departments. There's one or two that isn't signed. We have signed with many district municipalities. We have signed with the MECs that are driving rural development in each and every province. The organization of NARISEC as agents of change is going on ahead. The recruitment of their young people as change agents in rural wards is giving us good reason to sleep. We continue to engage land reform beneficiaries and organize agriculture to assist their departments to improve the policies and sharpen our interventions. That is it that we have prepared to share with you, Chairperson. I thank you.
DG, do you have any additions from your side?
I've got my colleagues with me who may want to throw in an addition or two, colleagues.
But because this is a politically driven process and the deputy minister is here, if he wants to add anything, this is your chance, Chief. This is an opportunity for members to raise questions for clarity, but you may also comment on matters that you have heard and seen. I'm closing this matter now because I see no hands. Ngosi yam, maqale wena. Ndiyazi ukho into ethi ladies first, akho ladies ngoku. Silingana sonke. Enkosi.
Thanks, Chair. I'd like to commend the department for their report. I have just two questions, Chair. From the work already done by the Portfolio Committee, I think in talking to slide 7 and particularly looking at KZN and the Eastern Cape, if we pay attention closely to Mhlonto, we went to the areas of Solo and Kumbu and looked at a number of projects that we implemented, especially the maize that was there. And from our understanding as a portfolio committee, we came to understand that was more an ASCISA-driven project rather than a rural development project. We would like to gain further clarity on that as to who's really driving the project as far as the implementation is concerned. And in taking then the rest of the areas, particularly in the former Transkei, with all that maize produced, what are the storage facilities that have been set up, like a building of silos? The acting DG has also talked about focusing on rural households and buying food from those rural households. As an individual residing in rural communities, particularly that of Mvezo, we were approached by ASCISA, who said to us they will plant our fields at 200 rands for the past 5 years, but they will take away 90% of the harvest and leave us with 10%. I'd like to understand then, how is it empowering rural communities when you're taking away 90% of the harvest and only leaving us with 10%? I think those are the two for me, Chair. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. First of all, one must applaud really the presentation by the department. It's a very good one. It's just that sometimes these very good things doesn't really happen because the delivery arm is sometimes very much slow, or they don't want to, or maybe it might happen that the monitoring of the part there at the grassroots doesn't work well. But let's leave that one there. Because I'm a very slow learner, I just want to understand, in the olden days, we did have your Fort Cox and whatever agricultural colleges. Are these now, is the FET going to take their place, or what is going to happen? Because I know that from your agricultural colleges, your Fort Cox, Mesifumana Bandekutwa Ngabalimi. I thank you, sir.
Thank you very much, Makabo.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'd like to thank the department for their presentation. In slide 11, program of action, the Chair, I want to know to the department, in the recruitment selection, they provide the skills to the youth that they recruit. When they finish the skills, they give them job, or they let them to start their own companies. If they do that, where did they get the money to start? Again, Chair, there is some this Lady Sec participant recruited. In case it's any zero, Comrade Chair, I want to know why KZN is zero, because I'm growing up in KZN. I know the KZN. There is many youth that is crying about skill and job creation in KZN. Why KZN is zero is because the leadership of KZN is staying in the township urban area, or because what I know in KZN, I'm growing up in the rural area. Maybe the department needs or wants assistance from us as a committee, because we know our areas in the rural area. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much.
So I guess we're going to presentation that DG went to Mnadiga Kool. On slide 6, he mentioned all the stakeholders, the Minister of the Rural Development, also premiers, MECs, mayor of the district, and local municipalities. But this presentation is done to MPs. We are nowhere to fit. You go up there to your constituency, and then you are being told that you are just interfering in my ward. You are taking my responsibility. All what you have to do as a member of parliament, you have to sit there and do a budget and then leave it there, not to come down. Now, if we are not included here, we are the one who are very, we are the first people to get this information. And then once we get it, we cannot go and monitor what is happening on the ground. That worries me more than anything. And another thing, whenever you are speaking and talking about the farms, small farms and then commercial farms, but you are not mentioning very, very big arable land under Amakos. It's not included here. And even Amakos too, and also in Dunas, you'll find very big areas, arable land, but when you think that you can do something, they say, this belongs to me. I don't think we can be wise enough to leave out Amakosi and also Indunas. Because in our, when I was a small boy, people in the rural area, these communal land, were producing a lot of food. A man goes to look for work in town, but for 3 or 2 months must be at home to plow for his family. But this time now we're doing nothing. I think the department must revisit this, what I'm raising now. Going further, I think slide number 10. Recruitment of the youth. There, it seems that the department is just concentrating to the youth that has been recruited. But what about the youth remained behind? I mention this because I have a big interest to the youth. As I was at home during these holidays, I discovered a young boy of 25 years. He has been brought up in the farm with a white farmer. And then when that white farmer wanted to leave with him, he refused. Now, as the department, the government is introducing these tractor projects, that boy can drive. That boy can service. That boy can repair the tractor. But now this boy cannot be given an opportunity to take some of the youth there where he is and start doing something with them. I can appreciate if this thing can be just be looked after.
Before you leave the point, the boy is KZN?
KZN at the moment is just working with Department of Agriculture, but I never see such a wonderful boy. Once he starts working in the morning, if he didn't take tea in the morning, you might find him working right through the day. He is enjoying this. A matriculant. And when I talk to the Department of Agriculture, what are you doing with this man? This is the project of the government that the youth must be. Something must be done for the youth. Oh, they're just using him just for...
Okay.
Yeah. But they have no idea about what the government is thinking about the youth. If we have such a youth who has gained such experience and knowledge, and then we say, we're going to train ours, why don't we allow him to start doing something? Let me go further. Maybe I will keep on dealing, Chairperson. On slide that one, KZN with zero. This is embarrassing. I cannot tell what is happening. Maybe our champion there, the Premier, should tell us what he says. What has happened in KZN? As Mom Kiz has been mentioning here, I really don't understand. But the applications were invited. I still have a problem, Chairperson. As they are introducing this to us, then we go to our constituencies. They advertise this. We are no more to recommend anything to the department from our constituencies. Then everything must come to the newspaper. In the rural area, there are places where you have to pay a return of 50 rand to get a newspaper in town. But why don't you use our constituents' offices just to introduce what we have got? Not to say that MPs, as I had mentioned at the beginning, that we are nowhere to be fitted. We simply make the policy and then we don't make a follow-up and monitoring this. Slide 14. Well, I have mentioned this, in fact, you did mention that they are managing the farm. As I have said, that I'm worried about the communal land, where to fit. Maybe. And let me just leave it because I have already mentioned this. At this page 17, you know Bululwane irrigation scheme is next to the palace. That irrigation scheme was built during the late King Cyprian, the father of the King's Valley chain. The Department of Agriculture last year came there with two big tractors with all equipment. And the irrigation is just quite good there, but nothing is taking place. I cannot go there and say why. Because a member of parliament, they are councillors. all level of the people are there, but they are just neglected. That thing has been neglected. And it is mentioned here as if it is producing something, but there is nothing. All what they are doing there, they simply cut the grass to roof their roundabouts. And it is embarrassing. This is really embarrassing. I don't know how to put it, but I'm very, very worried because we raised even something that is not monitored, is not followed, but it's written there. Just because you fund this project thinking that they are existing. I think the last one now. It was very nice to hear on slide. Why was slide here now? It should be slide 18. The learnership. Then we have these tenders all over the country. When these tender people come in the area, all what they do, they just employ cheap labor. When they leave no skill, nothing. The government put this budget for this area, but the tender man will go there and do the work and take all this budget and move out to his place and leave nothing there. You mentioned fencing, paving. The government is building roads all over the country, but our people are not the part of it. Only the cheap labor. That you can use that person anyhow, and after that, nothing. They cannot even maintain the potholes in those roads, although they were there, they were the part of it, because they were employed. They were not given the skill to maintain this after the road has been given, handed over to them. I'm not criticizing, but I'm just raising issues that I have a concern about them. I think the presentation by our DG is wonderful, but it has raised more concern to us. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. My first question is on this signing of the memorandum of understanding. There was an indication that the department has signed the memorandum of understanding with districts, mayors, with the MECs, but at the national level, the departments that have not yet signed. What is the problem? And also, which are those departments that have not yet signed the memorandum of understanding? Then, in one of the meetings, we're told that the department gave FHS and Agricultural College the terms of reference to develop the practical training. Can we be briefed about the progress on that matter? Then the other one is on the issue of these 467 projects currently under the CAP program. Can that be linked with the 200 struggling farms that were told that they were identified by the department, so that we understand exactly how many farms are you dealing with, or are they falling under this CAP program? Then the other one is the, we are saying that 500 youth reported to DIPRAG. Then some of the young people were not fit, so they have to be withdrawn. So have they been replaced?
how many were they? And also, did you consider the constitutional right of those people that they should not be discriminated according to their health or fitness? Because you need not to violate people's rights. Then you mentioned also the issue of the further events on 1 March and 1 April. Can the acting DG elaborate what are those events? And also the issue of the Free State Province, which also acted late on the 1st of February on this issue of the young people. And the last one, Chair, is the issue of the, we're talking of creating sustainable jobs. Then here they are telling us about these young people which have been identified, but they will be employed for a period of 2 years. Then after 2 years, what will happen? Do you have any strategy of replacing those people to whether regional offices or to where? Because when talking of sustainable jobs, those jobs must be really be sustainable. Then you're talking of developing a framework for norms and standards of service delivery in rural areas. Then when is that going to be finalized? Thank you, Chair.
Nabule, DG, you have a long list, and I'm going to add to your list some few omissions, perhaps, to start with. You are saying nothing in your strategy about farm dwellers, so you do not factor them in your strategy. Is that a deliberate omission, or you have a different plan for them in a different strategy? I'm just interested to find out what really is the reason for you ignoring farm dwellers. Remember, I'm not talking about farm workers. I'm talking about farm dwellers. There's no indication of the role of your department in your strategy on soil erosion. There's a huge soil erosion in the traditional communal land, and you're not factoring that, because that repairing and protection of soil erosion can create more jobs as well. I'm interested in this thing. Perhaps you could explain to us a little bit more. You have a qualification on PLUS properties, isn't it? You do a qualification from the Auditor General. You don't. Has been removed now. Oh, okay. Because you see, the reason why I'm asking this question is because you are saying you're going to buy more and warehouse. And I was thinking that if you did not correct the previous qualification on this thing, to add more is going to create more problems for yourself. So that's fine. If that is the case, I will leave that one out. You have indicated, DG, that you are going to be surveying the land. I think there are two things related to the surveying of the land. The first one is your capacity to survey. Remember, this is your one of the major tasks of your department, to survey all the surface land of South Africa. But you are going to be surveying these ones, these pieces of land that you're targeting for this particular program. What about the rest? That's number one. Number two, it relates to the capacity of the department to perform this function. The Auditor General tells us that your department will continue to be qualified in this regard precisely because you are not performing this function. Last year, we requested the Surveyor General and the head of the DG's office to come to this committee to tell us how they will deal with this work. Now that we are talking to you as the head of the department, would you help us with what is the strategy on this? About two questions relating to the 467 projects that have been included for recapitalization. First of all, you didn't indicate how you selected them. You remember Mdu last year told us, oh, Mr. Shaban told us that you have got 1,407 of projects in this category, but you have selected 467. How did you come to this conclusion? Related to this, the report of the commission has indicated that they will be involved in 800 of such projects. And I want to know whether they are related to 467. Is 467 inclusive in the 800 of the commission, or whether they are separate? I'm raising the same question as Ms. Ngwenyamabila on the unfit young people, but I'm not raising it in the context she's raising, because she's correct. My own view is that you are recruiting disabled young people, and the able-bodied young ones are turned away because they are not fit. Why don't you treat the unfit ones as disabled people? Why you turn these others away? Because you specifically said you are recruiting disabled young people. I'm not talking about rights here, I'm just talking about the department told us last year, or no, a year before last, that you've got 200 JVs, or share equity schemes in the Western Cape that you have investigated. And your report, we're still awaiting. But the reason why I'm asking now is whether this 200 is counted as part of this 800 or 467, or is separate. And if separate, what is the strategy around that? The last one relates to the MOUs. I do not understand, DG. Is it possible for you to explain? Are the MOUs only for your projects and not vice versa? The other department cannot invite you to say, for instance, we have a dam in Daung and we want to lay the water pipes for the communities there. But in those communities, we need this and other things like your gardens and other things to use the water for the peoples. Can they sign an MOU with you and invite you to come and join them? If you do, have you got a budget to be able to do that? Thank you.
You want to shoot first?
Yes, I want to start with.
You don't want to be a sweeper?
No, I don't want to sweep.
Okay, go ahead.
if I need to come back,
okay.
I think I must start with this political one, which is raised by Ubaba as to in the implementation of our NARICEC or anything else, the MPs are nowhere. We're talking premiers, mayors, and so on. My response is that the department as an implementing arm, or as part of the executing authority, cannot prescribe to the politicians what they have to do. It cannot do that. But the politicians, who are the legislators, have a right to monitor everything. How they do it, they themselves must find a formula. They can do it through their PCOs. They can visit those programs and identify the weaknesses and come and raise all those with us. If you look at the various levels we have included here, it's the people who are the executing authorities. The premiers, for instance. We're not involving them because they are politicians. It's because the premiers are the chief executives at the provincial level. So are the mayors and so on. But we think that the parliamentarians or legislators, as people's representatives, will have all the rights to monitor every project and be able to raise that through this particular forum. And we think that Parliament, when people talk about an oversight, that's the role, because they have an oversight on every project which we are implementing, not necessarily this particular project, but that, because of the separation of powers, we cannot be able to conflate those two. That's our response on that. Not that we want to leave them behind, but through the oversight model, parliamentarians can be able to do that. That's the last issue which I thought I need to raise in relation to Inarisa. The people whose rights are being violated. If we recruit these young people, then once you're there, you discover that one is pregnant. Then you're talking about a very rigorous program in the military. That can have other consequences. Or you find somebody medically with TB. It's contagious. That person must be referred somewhere. We're talking about such cases. So those people, what we have done is to say, no, we're turning back, let them go and deal with the necessary steps of dealing with whatever they are having. Refer some of them to the appropriate institutions like the clinics and so on. You see, the debate of the young pregnant ladies is as sensitive as the debate, which I think has not been concluded, about what do you do with the young student at school level, which was never concluded. It was raised at a particular level, but up to now, it's still left to the schools. How do they respond to that? Because it's a fact that it will be difficult for that kid to stay at school right through. It raises all the questions of immorality, but also the questions of safety. But I think it's worse in our program when you have to take them into very hard exercises and so on. So once they've gone through that, they are able to reapply and come back. So nobody's, what you call, has been violated. So those are the cases we're talking about.
Don't leave the point, DM. Why don't you treat them as disabled? Like you have disabled people who are not going to go through the rigorous training.
Yes. You see, if you're talking about treating a pregnant person as disabled, I mean, by the fact that you're referring that person to the appropriate institution, you're treating that person. But I don't think in a case of a military, you can be able to keep a pregnant person unless you refer that person to the appropriate institution. And once the person has undergone what during that particular period, then is able to go to come back. That's the only option which is available for now. The same thing with the person who has TB. You have to refer that person to a particular institution. Once that person has been treated, then the person can be able to come back. You see, that's what you have to do. But you are also saying it does not necessarily mean it should be done by our department. The referral can be done by our department, but who has to take care of that would be another department. That is the working together of the various teams. But remember that some of the disabled people would be treated differently from the people who might be having a particular, what you call, illness at a particular time, which is curable. So then lastly, Chair, from my side, this MOUs between departments and us. You see, the President has come up with this idea to say no silos. Be that as it may, there would still be departments responsible for particular areas of work. Where we are a core department, we are a driver. We have to sign with the others. But where we are supporting, they will have to sign with us. They will call us. So there are many other areas where we're playing a supportive role. And then, but those agreements are not our agreements. We can't bring them into this particular committee. We will end up bringing everything. But we'll bring where we are the main drivers. We might refer to some of them that in this particular area, but this is the department which is driving that one. We are also implicated in one way or another. But we expect that those departments would report to the appropriate portfolio committee. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much, Chairperson and DM. The question around ASCII, sir, that was asked, I think that is the very first one. ASCII, sir, have for a very long time been promising to come and collaborate with us so that we can have not just an MOU, but a memorandum of agreement about how it is we're going to be collaborating. We have signed with all of the provincial departments in the Eastern Cape around the agri-parks, because ukutya that we get from emasimini, ukutya sifumana from the household gardens, must then be sold, for instance, eDutywa, in the agri-park that we are finishing in eDutywa, with the state-of-the-art food processing equipment. So that food is then redirected to be sold in state markets, such as the primary school nutrition program, and the soup and everything. Now, we have invited ASCII, but the process of us signing this MOA somehow is struggling. Specifically with reference to Msonto, we have fenced Amasimi Msonto, not all of them, we are in the process. Following Amasimi, we are still to talk with them with the fact that they are taking a certain percentage because they are bringing mechanization, they are paying for diesel, for everything. That is not our approach. Our approach is, if the developer is in theme, it's a crop field like Edia Dalawa of about 400, owned by a community and the chiefs. Chief Makhuluke, for instance, has got 215 hectares of maize that we're going to be harvesting, belonging to Miyahos and Makhuluke. All of that food harvested goes to be stored for the benefit of that community. If it's sold, Premier Foods, for instance, wants to buy all the 1,000 hectares from MSC as a Makhuluke. All of that money goes back to the kitty of the trust, Yasedi Adalao, as a Makhuluke. That's how it works. So when they come to us and we eventually sign a memorandum of agreement with ASCII, they will have to abide by our regulations because we are doing this thing developmentally. And the way we do it, we don't just bring experts from outside. These experts must train these people so that we don't. Next season, we don't need their experts because we provide a tractor so that they plow, they rig, they follow line fields. So, we're quite aware of the modus operandi, the ASCII. And when we eventually pin them down to signing an MOA with us, on our comprehensive rural development sites, we will not go with the route of 95%, 5% to the community. We will avoid that because we are building wealth inside communities and their abilities will come as in our world. Now, in Sonso, we've made a little bit of blunders. We gave households, layers, we gave them goats. And what we found out in Dova, look, Amakanda, there's so much eggs. Communities is only able to consume 1% of the eggs they are producing. They've got no market for all, at all, for the rest of the eggs. Abola Magyan, Amaganda, and we have to throw eggs away. Because we were not careful when we approved the business plan from the Department of Agriculture, because we don't do things ourselves. We ask the Department of Agriculture if it's agriculture, and ask the Department of Social Development if it's a related matter, to actually guide us and lead, because these are their mandates. But we're told by the community, look, we don't have the markets. Even the market, Yasemtat, cannot even absorb Lamagant. So what we need to do now is to be careful. When we approve a certain commodity, we must look at the entire value chain. Who's going to buy these eggs? This is why we're building these agro-processing centers and so on. So the plans for the very first agro-industrial site, which is going to be at the Solo College, is now in the drafting stage, Chief. When it comes to fencing, we have in Muyeshe given a service provider. Not all of the households that need to be fencing, 747. We said to them, we are going to give you a tender so that you train 15 young people, 26. You will work with them until you finish fencing the first 300, just half of them. But after you finish them, we want to make sure that you have trained these young people and they become a cooperative. They are going to get a tender from us all for fencing the rest. So that imali ingabaleki, money must not fly away from communities. Money must revolve in communities. We don't want to create millionaires. We want to create jobs so that the money is spread right across the families. That's why then we are recording a change agent in each and every home and in finding out in each and every home how many people are not employed. So that when we work with the council stakeholders, they are the ones that say to us, ikhayalaka lawalanga, ikhayalaka mvuni. These are the people who are chosen by each and every family to become the job takers, because we want them, when they end jobs in our projects, 50% of that money must be spent at home. They're not going to be here. It is in the contract that they are going to use 50% of what they earn in the CRDB projects, not for self-enrichment. We are trying to work around all of these systems and pin them down. And hopefully we're going to invite this committee to go and see what we're doing. So we just don't just come here and talk and we don't do. In as far as the agricultural colleges, we requested over 150 principals of these FETs. We flew them to Joburg last year, around the middle. And we pictured everything as Funyenza around Narisek. I said, this is what we want to do. We cannot do this thing without you. Please assist us. The DG of higher education was there. No. But we're not able to make a move except for EFETs Zalapa in the Western Cape, where we did the first orientation. But slowly in Joburg, they're coming in. Slowly. Because the problem that they've got, we want to give them this program while they are busy with their own day-to-day program, and it becomes difficult to juggle between the two. But specifically, this college, Yasefold Cox, Yona has given us a business plan, because it's no use to take these young people to go and be trained, but they don't have tractors on which they train them. For instance, some of these FET colleges, we want to train them auto mechanics, but they don't have the latest engines on which these children must practice. Some of them, they've got the engines of Ford, they're 1960. Whereas Ford and Gogu, the latest, they're using electronic gadgets. So we want to help them to have the latest equipment for training these young people so that they can do whatever they want. It's all, we were in Zol. This is where we're going to be building the factory at Zol, because they've got huge land at Zol. And they've got also underutilized boarding facilities. We want to turn Itzola, for instance, into an excellence school for this Narisek. So we're doing our best to approach them. Are we going to be funding these young people when we are done? Because the exit point, by the way, this is not really a job. We're giving them 60 rands per day in terms of the EPWP specifications for 2 years of training. This is not really. These are stipends for 2 years. It is at the end of the 2 years. They can either go and look for a job, or we will make sure that we are facilitating with, together with areas like NYDA, make sure that these are given money to start their own businesses. We are doing this thing developmentally. I am running 4 chief directorates. One of them is the establishment of rural enterprises. We'll make money available to kickstart them so that they establish their own businesses. But we cannot do this on our own. That's why Okula, no N1DA, are actually being brought in to assist us in these things. In KwaZulu Natal, indeed, there is Uziro. minister is insisting that they must go through this process. We found a free state, that's the KwaZulu-Natal, that they were far ahead of us. They were far ahead of us in having young people that are ready. But we said, no, we want them to go through this. Because we want to ensure this thing is discipline. We want to ensure that they have been recruited, and each young person that comes from a ward must sign with a ward councillor, because they must go back and become a community servant in their own wards. We don't want to recruit a young person from KwaZulu-Natal, but he's been staying for the 6 years in Soweto. And then he gives us the name of a village, but he's not even known in his own village. So we want to make sure that these young people are known by their councillors in their own village, and obviously they are responsible. And so this is the route that we have insisted on. There is a tendency also that the minister picked up that e-province wants to hawk these young people to become young people only for Western Cape. Minister, no, they are not going to become young people for Western Cape. These are a national asset. We are developing them as national. That's why we are taking them all over the country. They go from Bloemfontein, they go to the Eastern Cape, they go to Western Cape. We want them to know their country so that they become a national asset, these young people. We'll appreciate, Councillor, Honorable MP, if you can assist the minister, who is already very much advanced with the Premier of KwaZulu-Natal in resolving this matter. It is really, really advanced. In the area raised by Ngos of being available, I think UTM has dealt with that. There can never be a talk of interfering. We really, really need help from every angle so that we all scrum as one country as the other rugby to making sure our young people become the agents for change. There will be a role to play for everybody. The land Yamakhosi is not being neglected. We are dealing with Itsimu Yakhosi, which is where the chief makes sure that he is producing land for the indigenous families, because that's how it works in the Sotho culture. It's not just for the king, I mean for the chief. Lomhlaba, there are very, very indigenous families. Really, they cannot be dependent upon to do much for themselves. And then Nkosi takes care of the destitute, as it was in the black tradition. This is why we have harvested the first 418 hectares of wheat in Tiagalawa. It's Moshe Zimvula, because it's been raining so much. And then Ukula could not assist us. We could, so far, sending in 213 tons of maize, of wheat. In slide 10, what about the youth who are remaining behind?
Sorry, you left us. You left us behind there. Is it 418 hectares of wheat, or is it 418 tons of wheat?
It's 418 hectares of wheat. And we are getting, in terms of Agri SA, they went there and they told us that it is first grade per hectare. We're getting anything between 3 and 4 tons per hectare. We've been told that we could be reaching something like 980 to 1,000 tons from these communal fields. Thank you, Chair. The youth who are remaining behind says, Adoningabo, what are we doing? We are flooded by these applications, of course. And it is a painful process to have to select from 4,000 in one sitting, and you must just take four. It's painful. Minister wanted us to start, when he gave this thing to us, with 50,000. We said, no, Minister, we can't. He then came back to us and said, take 19,000. I said, no, Minister, it's too much. We don't know how this thing works. We must pilot it. We must tweak it and practice and see how it's going to run. We agreed with the Minister that we're going to start with 9,000, taking 1,500 as a pilot. Now we know what to avoid when we recruit. Now we know what specific questions to ask. And hopefully, this young person, when he 25 years, we can drive a tractor, we can own Olima and everything. When we get to Ikwazulu Natal, we are going to have him now, yeah, into the net. But there is nothing that stops anybody in a rural area to write a special letter of pleading and said, look, you have not chosen Usbanbani, Usbusiso, or Umeri, or Uchimaima. This is why we are involving E ward councillors, because Baya Baha is one. So that if we could not take in the first intake, the Minister of the Department of Economic Development said, look, can you treble the number from 9,000 to 27,000? He said, Minister, it is going to cost us in every 3 months over 91.8 million rands. Every 3 months for these things. If you can make money available for us, we will be able to do that. So it's an open invitation, Kosi, that if there are excellent young people that we have missed, an argument can be made for us to include them. In as far as Bululwane irrigation scheme, yeah, no, there's this issue, you advertise in newspapers as the Yemakai. Very vital point. We don't have enough community radios. I spoke community radios many times to apply. We have put into magistrate offices, of course, to look in, and even in the municipal offices, adverts, but they must know about this and apply. It's not enough. We may need to consider, for instance, we took some of the adverts to Emma Kosini and tell them, ask them, would you please make aware of the families, would you, there is something like this. In schools, also we put the posters. Whatever other suggestions, because we've never grown even in, I mean, I grew up in a township, I don't even know what is the best way. Yeah. So we need to use also the Mgosi avenues to make sure that they know about the programs and everything, even churches and Kushunyere about these things. We invite the advice in all of these matters. A Bululwane irrigation scheme, I'm going to hand over to Uvusi Mahlangu. The question was a clear one. The Department of Agriculture delivered equipment, but there is nothing but Chief, the point that Prev Uvusi is going to raise is that we don't give this money into the Department of Agriculture and extend back. We implement, we go there ourselves. Even in as far as the recruitment of your partners that are going to help there, we are part of the selection processes together with them. But obviously, can get into some depth responses around irrigation schemes.
Thanks, Chair. Thanks, DG. It's now afternoon, members and colleagues. I may not provide a direct response around Bululwane, but what I can say is that as part of the SONA, you will notice that part of recapitalization and development, we also targeting the revitalization of all the different irrigation schemes. There's a slide that depicted about 27 of these irrigation schemes, and Bululwane is part of them. We are doing scoping exercises now to say what went wrong, what is the status around those irrigation schemes, and then plan proper how best can we tackle that. I must say that the irrigation scheme, as you will know, that they are mostly in the former homelands, is going to be a collaboration process. mainly the land reform farms. When I say land reform, I mean PLAS, LRAD, and restitution. There was a question around 467 versus the 200. I will assume that the member, when spoke about the 200, she was referring to the share equity scheme farm that we highly publicized around December last year. What is happening with the 200 farms in particular, which is the share equity, is that they are a little bit complicated in such a way that you need to do modeling. You need to review what went wrong, why shares all of a sudden collapsed, and then the department had to pump more money to revitalize those farms. What happened to the money? Who benefited and all the stuff? Progress so far is that we had workshops with all the beneficiaries who benefited under those 200 farms, mainly 80% in the Western Cape and some pockets in other provinces. Ironically, it turns out that those that are out of the Western Cape are doing well compared to those that are in the Western Cape. So basically, the main problem is in the Western Cape. We appointed specialists around the share equity issues and modeling to come and assist us. They started this week. They are going to do a sampling exercise just to review a few of them and advise the department accordingly how best can we revitalize this. We've got a target of end of March to come up with a recommendation to the minister around the share equity schemes. Why March? Because there will be financial implications, so this is meant to coincide with the budget vote speed up of the minister to say he is lifting the moratorium around the share equity scheme and what will be the monies involved in order to revitalize them, and a clear plan of how we are going to address the issue of the share equity schemes. They are not currently part of the recapitalization and development numbers. Recapitalization and development is targeting all other farms which, as the chair has pronounced, 1,407. That 1,407 includes mainly PLAS and LRAS farms. The breakdown, you mentioned something about the 800 from restitution. Yes, we've got also farms in restitution under recapitalization and development. The only slight problem with recapitalization, with the restitution farms is that their budget is mainly focusing on court orders, as we know about the court orders. So there's very little money that is budgeted for just to revitalize the restitution farms that are collapsing. But we are working closely with the restitution so that we ensure that we prioritize those farms, especially from the 1st of April, because they are handing over everything that is what do we normally call post-settlement to the Recapitalization and Development Unit, so that Recapitalization and Development Unit can address all the issues of collapsing farm. Then the 467 basically member was basically trying to show you that out of this 1,407, currently, because the process of contracting service providers is tedious, we've got about 411 that have got strategic partners, those projects, and about 56 is mentorship. So in recapitalization, we assess whether a project should be allocated a strategic partner when it's very intensive, needs a lot of engineering and a lot of machinery or infrastructure. We put it under a service provider. But if it's just a project where a farmer or beneficiaries are well off, but they just can't access market or do their cropping proper, we put a mentorship so that we don't spend much money. So we categorize that. The issue of communal land, is some of it is part of the cap that has been responded to. And then farm dwellers, I think maybe the acting teacher will respond, but maybe the responder is that in our packaging model, including the recapitalization, what we do now, we also look at the agri-villages within these farms, so that the workers can have a proper, what you call human settlement, proper dwellings, even if the worker is no more employed in the farm, but there's conditions for living up happen to establish enterprises. Hence, it makes easier now to say, under BLAS, we'll be able to buy stock and barrel, and that enables us also to create jobs, because you can sustain the jobs that you find in the farm and create new jobs, whether temporarily or seasonally, in these farms, because now you buy them as a going concern. It also assists you not to burden the amount for recapitalization and development, because you find them going. It's just a question of guiding whoever are the beneficiaries to ensure that the farm doesn't go down and they sustain it. Then the issue around the state land, survey of the state land, you will know, members, that the issues around the audit and the qualification and such was that the departments involved, which is ourselves and Public Works, they are saying the accuracy of what we own as government under this state land is not accurate. Hence, the Auditor General pronounced to say that is the qualification that will stay longer. There are three ministers involved here, Minister of Land Reform, Rural Development and Land Reform, Public Works and National Treasury. A master plan was developed by a task team to say what are the Auditor General findings and how best can this be addressed. The lead there is National Treasury under the Office of the Accountant General. We agreed on the master plan. We are working on the master plan. I don't think it's true to say this qualification will stay until time immemorial. There are milestones that have been achieved now. It's just that I will know what is the latest on the matter, but I know that the three departments are working on this, and it should be able to clean it. There are timelines that are set actually in the master plan to say when this should be completed, so that the Accountant General and the Auditor General can be happy and satisfy themselves around the issue of removing this qualification in the books of both departments, Public Works and Land Reform. Thank you. Yes.
We have got somebody, Chairperson, from the Deeds Office in Tobedi, from the SC, who can speak on the survey questions.
Thank you, DG. Thank you, Shakasin. Greetings to the colleagues and members. Although Vusi has already touched on this matter, but particularly I would say that the department is equipped through the existing offices of the Surveyor General, particularly in terms of specific surveys of land that is identified for CRD related development programs or projects on demand, in which cases the SGs are well positioned to support the programs on survey related matters, and this would include the technical specifications for surveys to be conducted. Where capacity exists in the office itself in that particular region, the office is already are conducting the surveys practically, but where capacity is not there, at least the technical specifications and managing quality of such surveys is done. With regard to the surveying of unsurveyed state land, this function has been taken by the Office of the Chief Surveyor General, and it is done. The actual survey is performed by the private practicing land surveyors of the country, and the projects are managed from the Office of the Chief Surveyor General. So this will ensure that the unsurveyed state land, in terms of surveying the boundaries, we will be done, and then that information will then be used for any development on land and administration going forward. This will really form a good basis for land development and land information management. Thank you.
Chair, I'd like to request ODDG responsible for infrastructure development rural areas to answer some of the questions. Thanks. DG Leon.
Thank you, Chair.
Thanks, Chair. Maybe just to build on in terms of the agri-villages, obviously it is an integral part also of the land tenure security bill that is currently out, but we're already beginning to pilot the program, and we are in the conceptualization design phase at the moment, where we are trying to build up exactly how a sustainable agri-village would look like, as well as in terms of saying people would have a sustainable human settlement, but be able to sell their labor elsewhere, but also how do we create opportunities for them within those same agri-villages that they're going to reside in. So we haven't left out the issue of farm dwellers, although it was not in the presentation today. The issue also, Chair, of the sustainable...
Excuse me.
Yeah.
Can you stay with the agri-village since you have voluntarily offered to give us information? Agri-villages usually are not on the people's land. They are on somebody else's land. If you're saying that this is related and linked to land tenure security bill, how do you reconcile the two?
Obviously, Chair, what we are doing is that in terms of all of the farm dwellers or farm tenants who live on different farms, we would want to also make sure that we deal with issues of tenure security. Remember in the past, through the previous legislation we had for tenure security, like your Extension of Security of Tenure Act, like your LTA Act, it cut off pieces of farms and really was not sustainable. It did not deal with all the issues. So that's why we want to build up in terms of an agri-village, in terms of how we're conceptualizing now, that they will have a place of residence so people cannot be removed off these properties. So it means we'll have to deal with the issue of tenure security in terms of acquisition of parts of those lands permanently, but we will not cut them off from areas where they still have to provide labor to surrounding farms. Remember, it will not be their own farm only that they provide labor on, but to other farmers, black or white, within the area that they reside in. So there's that link now between how farm dwellers used to operate before. But secondly, remember that in the past also, when we cut off those pieces of land, people were not given the full ambit of services. They did not have access to clean water, access to proper electricity. Even children were cut off from schools that they had to go to. So within the model, it would be important now that we bring in the issues of healthcare, of proper housing, etc., into how we conceptualize this model. So that's what we are doing now, different from how we were implementing the 10-year security programs in the past.
One last follow-up. This is the new model that will be implemented. What will happen to the existing agri-villages in this regard?
In terms of existing agri-villages that have already been created on farms. Yes, obviously, Chair, if current farmers have already, we would have to purchase. We would have to be able to acquire those properties as well and build them up in terms of the model. So it will become a model for the rest of the country. So that's why I'm saying we'll deal with two issues at the same time, the sustainable settlement as well as proper tenure security, which prevents evictions there. In terms of the question, Chair, on the soil erosion and how do we deal with this and its contribution then to jobs, most definitely, as part of the CRDP, which we didn't go into detail, we just said we roll out CRDP, but one of the parts deals with sustainable use of land, and through that we will definitely create jobs. We also have a particular component that deals with disaster management interventions. And their job is not only to help us intervene when there's an actual disaster, but to help us to prevent these disasters. Because soil erosion in itself can actually lead to disasters within areas where people are not able to produce properly on land. So we have a specific component, and they definitely will contribute to the number of jobs that we are creating. Coming to the issue of how do we ensure that when we give out tenders, especially for infrastructure projects, that they actually leave skills behind and do not make use of only cheap labor. I think it has been a bit of a challenge as we've been trying to implement, because in the short-term projects, you know, where you're finding people are there for a few weeks, we have to try and build that into our model. So in this past few months that we've been implementing fencing projects, etc., it's more been a case of, like, the service provider in his contract has stipulations of how those skills are to be transferred. But you're finding that where the project takes 2 weeks to implement, it's becoming a bit difficult. So we want to use this cadre of NARISEC youth also that we are building up to actually be skilled in these areas, so that after the 2 years, we also have a program that they are employed to take on these contracts on their own. To give you an example, if we are rolling out now the paving projects in the country, The idea is that we create enterprises that actually make the bricks themselves. They actually have the ability and the skills to make these bricks in their own brick making enterprises. Then we have cooperatives that will purchase from them in terms of the actual construction work. Now, obviously, because construction is something now that you need engineers, etc., we will use people to site supervise those areas, not giving those tenders to them. But the tenders will go to cooperatives in the community, where they will be employed and supervised by professionals until, over the next few years, we build those professionals from our own cadre of young people that we are working with right now. So that is the model that we will be using. And lastly, in terms of maintenance, surely in South Africa, I think we have a huge problem of maintenance of our infrastructure, especially in our rural areas. So again, there, we are building a skill within people so that we will, through our program, as well as the CRDP, remember we have, besides the youth program we're running of NARISEC, we have a model that we still need to implement of job creation within these rural areas through CRDP. And maintenance of rural infrastructure will be one of the areas where it will be long-term jobs created, because you will have crews, if you want to call it, maintenance crews who have to manage then your facilities in the area, your roads in the area, your water infrastructure in the area. And they will be employed with our assistance and managed by the municipalities of the area. That would be also how we help to capacitate the local municipalities to deal with the problem that is faced in terms of maintenance. So I hope I've covered that, Chair.
Chair, there's one or two questions we might have missed, such as the one-year events of the 1st of March and the 1st of April around the NARISEC young people. On the 1st of March, Chairperson, hopefully Ministry may invite the committee to enjoy with us as we launch the NARISEC for the first time. It's going to be launched, I think the area, if Elton can remind me, it's going to be here in the Western Cape, in Dayselsdorp. That's going to be the national launch of the National Rural Youth Service Corps. The young people who are being trained at De Brug would not have completed the 7 weeks of their training. So we're hoping that they are going to be transported so that they come and parade in full uniform together with the DM and the minister, also in the NARISEC uniform. I think you're also invited to, at Liberty, maybe if you could talk to the ministry, because it's a minister's office event, this particular one. And on the 1st of April, we're hoping to be beginning nationally using these young people to do the actual door-to-door profiling of the households. There's also an event of actually taking the second group of these young people to a military base. I'm not sure which one it's going to be, but we're taking the next batch of 500 for this discipline. In as far as the framework of norms and standards, the work has started. The conceptual report has been finished. What the minister has asked us to do now is, because when we work in rural areas as civil sort of, we're not working just as this department. We're working with expertise other departments, like for instance in roads, in schools, early child development, and agri parks, the departments of agriculture. We must now take these norms and standards document and go and sit with each and every partner of our departments to make sure that they are having a buy-in and they give us their own specifications, because we don't have the expertise, for instance, in the size of the road, the strength of a brick, you know, to pave a road. They must, but we just want to come up with one united document from which we all are reading the norms and the standards for constructing anything in the rural areas. This is just about all that we noted, Chairperson. I don't know whether there's anything that we've missed out. We'll abide by your guidance here.
I responded, maybe I was indirect. By the time we started the recap, we identified the earlier projects under PLUS, which were 504. We prioritized them. However, as we do the analysis, we realized that there's more than that. So all in all, our baseline was the 1,407 projects. looking into all of them. I can safely say that it's far more than 400. Okay, the 467 check talks to those that we have successfully contacted the service providers. It's 411 strategic partners and 56 under mentorship, but the total number of projects are 1,407. Those that were advertised, you will know that we entered into a national campaign to advertise, were about 840, combination of PLUS, ELDRAD, and restitution. So we far exceeded the target that we have initially identified for 504 projects. We basically tapping into all the 1,407 farms that were bought since 1994.
But the more you answer, the more you create another question, because you're just saying you prioritized. You're not saying what was the basis for you to say we are selecting that one and not the other one. You are not telling us that.
Chair, there was a survey done by our consultants. They look at all the PLUS projects. They came up with the results of what is green, which means the farm is okay, amber, which is in between, and then red, which is bad. So we took from that study, and then we came with this 504 that we are prioritizing.
I'm not going to ask this question now because you're creating another one, but I'm not going to ask it. I think the members got the drift of what we're talking about. DM, when you intervene here, please, let me just raise the issue. You know, I grew up in South Africa, I was not born elsewhere. I'm used to the idea that we always get the people blaming the victim. So when you have green, amber, and red, I don't believe there's any of these communities or groups that have been given land that would deliberately allow their land to be red. They don't choose to do that. So when you do the actual subjective or even objective survey, and you say this one is green, this one is red, that one is yellow or amber, what are you saying to the victim, the actual person who is supposed to be a beneficiary of this investment of the department? I think you could comment on that.
I was not going to comment on that, but I thought that the example of what Uvusi is saying, it's not about blaming the beneficiaries. It's more about saying what is the state of the farm. Is it at 80% of what it's supposed to be producing or doing? Is it at 50%? Is it at 20%? And on the basis of that, you just attach the colors to say this is near to its productivity levels, therefore we will give it green. But you start going into the reasons. There might be different reasons. It might be linked to the training, which is not there. It might be linked to the access to the resources, access to the finances, a whole host of reasons. For instance, in some areas we've been able to find out that in some of the farms there's whole conflict on how the trusts, some of the trusts have been running some of those farms, those restored land, and so on and so on. So there might be a number of reasons which objectively are the reasons which we ourselves, as part of the review, we must look at and say, how do we deal with this particular matter? But the major thing, it's about the skill. It's about the skill which we must give to our people to be able to deal with those farms and support. Because sometimes we might have just given and not given the required support. We made certain assumptions which are wrong assumptions. I'm not sure whether that does satisfy the question, but I think there might be some additions.
Want to, because it must be clarified. Well, you could do what you wanted to do. you before I asked you to come.
No, what I just wanted to was a small addition on what was requested around the delivery agreements that we mentioned the ministries. We cannot be able to do that now, but all we can be able to say, some of the reasons, for instance, why these are lagging behind. You have new ministers. Even before they can send them assign what they understand. As an example, if you talk about labor, Ministry of Labor, which is our partner, you talk public enterprises and so on, you sit there with new ministers. Before they can be able to sign that, you have to go, you must be thorough with them on what are the implications of what they are signing, what resources, which they are committing. Gone are those days where ministers would just sign what the officials are telling them. Ministers themselves, they must satisfy themselves as to whether this is implementable, this is budgeted for, can they be able to release those resources and so on. Some it might be all ministers. They need clarification on what they are committing themselves to. So it's a very rigorous process. As late as yesterday, we're still dealing with those issues. So on a daily basis, we have to clarify those issues. Sometimes you even need a one-on-one with a particular ministry to clarify how certain things are going to be implemented. Thanks.
So three hands from your side. You can go ahead.
Thank you, Chair. Now, I just wanted to add to what Vusi was saying, that the dashboard analysis, which revealed the green, the amber, and the red, I think this was just to help us in terms of prioritizing, because you'll find that there were those projects that were at the critical stage of the distress. Now, you needed immediate intervention. And also, there were those that could survive a year, which means you could, again, with the resources that you have, you could maybe budget for them for next year. Now, this does not mean that the ones that have been prioritized, it's the end of the list. It's an ongoing exercise. I think next year, when we have more money, we are going to take some in the 1,400 and put them in the basket of the 467. Thank you, Chair.
No, I'm actually going to add to say, Chair, that in terms of the strategic plan over the MTF period, what the DG was talking about in terms of the 1,407 actually adds up to the whole 3 years. So they started with this, then next year the current financial year, there's another 500 and something. So it's just adding to that to say it's covered in the period that we're working with.
We have had about five dear members showing appreciation and happiness of the presentation of the department. Before I join them, I want you to answer three questions, maybe not today. Do you have the money to do this work? Do you have the necessary budget to do all the things that you have put in front of us? Related to that, I hear the DG saying, you have agreed to fill all the posts. I'm assuming, because the President has made that announcement, that only those posts that have been budgeted for will be filled. So I'm not going to ask the question about the capacity, but I'm going to ask the question relating to how many jobs will be created by that budget. Remember, the President has asked us in the House, members of Parliament, to ask you how many jobs will be created by this. So when you come back with your strategic plan, in fact, the operational plan will be better suited to provide that information. How many jobs are going to be created by all this that you're talking about? And thirdly, lastly, You said all this will contribute towards food security. That's what you said. So at the end of the process, you will have to say to us how many households and all what you allocate to food security. has this work contributed in doing away or reducing poverty in the rural areas? Because if you gave us those three, you would have given us some sense to debate in the House as to whether we are monitoring a department that is working. You remember there was a period in the country, DM, they were saying something saying we are a nation at work for a better life for all. Now, we want to be very proud of a department at work to create jobs, to improve security, to reduce poverty. For us, we will be happy to clap the hands that the members are clapping now. I do not want to clap now. I want us to clap when we are submitting the strategic plan in the House and say, we know that this particular department will create this X number of jobs, and the impact on food security will be this, and poverty will be reduced by this estimated percentage. I do not want the answer now. I think we will do that when we go to the House with your budget and strategic plan. Because I'm sure if you gave us the answer now, and this is what the acting DG said, they've been asked this question. Perhaps how many jobs? And clearly from what you have tabled here, the real reason why you're giving us a slideshow is precisely because you're giving us a summary of the plans, the intention of how you respond to the president. So you do not have the plan now. Give us that when you are ready to go to the legislature. Thank you very much. Honorable members, we want to leave this area. We still have other areas to deal with. And OVC here was indicating, say, afternoon, so this is Susage Siakala. He wants to go and have lunch. So before I release them, we need to deal with the other items. The two items I have in the agenda, one of them is, no, two of them are the minutes and the statutory report. I'm going to put the matter to the House because they have been circulated, both the set of minutes and the statutory report. And members have been having these reports with them for some weeks now. Can we take them as read? Yes. Mama Ngwenya Mamela.
Thank you, Chair. I propose that we take them as read, but we submit some spelling mistakes, some comments to Pumla.
You were there. You read the report. Are you happy? Thank you very much. But you see, at the end of that report, it says specifically, we want to say to the House, these are the things we are recommending. There's a list of those. Are you happy with that? Because this report, we do not want this report to be adopted in the House by just noting them. We want specific recommendations that will be adopted for the department to implement. Remember, they recommended Malawi to us. We went there, we got the information, we now are bringing it back, but it belongs to the House, it does not belong to us. So before we submit it to the House, we need to be sure that the department will have to integrate all our recommendations in the strategic plan that we are bringing. I'm not certain that you have seen the report. I see your eyes are running around the House. You have not seen the report. All right. Let us agree with Wanyamabila's proposal. The department will be given a copy of the report. And other members who have not read them will put some notes and submit them to Pumla, so that when we have the final set of recommendations to be tabled in the House, the report is not going to be changed except for typographical errors. But we want you to be happy with the incorporation of the recommendations into your strategic plan, because we will recommend to the House to adopt those recommendations as actions to be followed beyond that. I know that if you study something in another country, it may not be suitable for your own country, but you send us there and we spend a lot of money going to Malawi and spend a week there, we can't say nothing has happened. Otherwise, it will be fruitless expenditure. Thank you very much. Yes, dear? Okay, thank you very much. The second set of minutes, I put the minutes because they also have circulated. Remember, this other set is the one where Ms. Kema spoke to us and challenged us to put questions to her. It was about the bill. Which is going to be read for the second time in the House today. Agreed? Is everybody happy? The two sets? It's a strange way of doing things. Because we want to adopt the minutes here. If we postpone and say we'll provide notes, it would be better, Ms. Konyemabila, if we say to the meeting, we adopt them as amended, but we do not hear what amendments are there. Sedang Katasen Maui. Elton?
Not related to the minutes, but that bill will be read next week because there is still SONA debate, not today.
Next week. Oh, not today.
Remember, today is SONA, they're not going to read bills while it's SONA next week.
Oh, okay. The stop and start. It's all right, Elton. I still put the minutes. Agreed? Kaloba, I have no amendments in front of me. So I can't say adopted as amended. The rules give me the power to say they have no amendments, therefore they have been adopted. Pumzi.
Sorry.
Ms. Konyo.
Just on 6.4.
Which
test? The 25th. The one for the yes, 6.4, just the way it says the bill without, to correct that, to integrate the with without.
Ms. Manyamabira is suggesting that the two words should be one word. I know. I want everybody to understand what you are raising. I read it as without. Thank you. Any further amendment before the announcement? Somebody who has been listening to your presentation and the debate about it, who they thought that this meeting was going to end at 5 today. DM, your case. We adopt the minutes as amended. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Chairperson. The one debating. Chairperson, we just want to announce that you will be receiving an invite. We will process it in the office. international conference on dynamics of rural transformation in emerging economies. It's a follow-up, in fact. It's a policy dialogue on the whole debate of the sustainable rural development. It follows up that some of the things from this conference which I've mentioned, which was held in New Delhi with our South partners participating in that. So we're having this policy dialogue where we're involving a number of stakeholders from the academia, policymakers, and so on. And you will be receiving this invite. And we expect that you will attend, Chairperson. It's a very important, it's not late. Remember, it's not long that we've reopened. See, we've started working only last week. We just want to announce that. We'll be processing those individual invites.
How many people are you expecting from this committee? All of us?
We will discuss it with the acting DG, but we will receive that invite maybe even before the end of the day.
The rule is that the inviter pays.
Sorry.
The rule is that the person, the community or institution that invites is the one that pays.
Well, there's nothing we pay, it's in Cape Town.
Well, there are hidden costs.
Yeah.
Consultancy.
Major costs is.
No, we don't consult.
And accommodation and transport were in Cape Town. That is covered already. You stay here.
So you will be providing buses to go to the venue?
Well, we can discuss it with the department, yeah.
Thank you.
There will be no problem.
All right. Honorable members, we sent a team to the two provinces, Northern Cape and Limpopo, for the oversight visit between the 28th and the 4th of March. Those two people gave us a report, but there is no action on the side of the provinces that we visited. We have to work with them so that they can give us the sites which we are visiting. They must give us people to accompany us. We want the role of the portfolio committees of the provinces. We want the role.
Thank you, Chair. The Chairperson is right, but what I want to say is that we have wrote a letter to the department directed to the office of the DG, Mr. Shabane. I copied Melissa Chetty, I copied your office, I copied Mr. Zwini, the Minister's office, in that correspondence so that they can facilitate the oversight that is envisaged by the committee to two provinces, and liaise and gave us contact persons from the provinces to liaise with in developing the program and getting assistance from the department in identifying the projects. What we've done as a committee is to send people to do our own study as a committee so that from the list that we're going to get from the department, we select to those that we have find interesting for the committee.
What perhaps DM now at DG we would request in particular, you see, because in the past we have had no working relationship, I'm talking about meaningful relationship, with the provincial legislatures. We have had in the past the department, your department, working with us and giving us personnel to go to the project. So I think if you could help us with those people that must be with us for that period and help us with the legislatures as well, because the legislatures have got their own. I know in the separation of powers, DM, you have no control over the portfolio committees. But it's important that we write to them and they form part of this thing, because they are the ones who are actually there. We are furthest from the ground in this regard. Sometimes we also prefer to have councillors as well, where the projects are located. So if you could help us, Elton, it will help. Yes, Chief?
You know, we have delegated Zola to assist with that. I'm sure we'll also accompany you on that visit. So we'll assist you with that.
You're not disabled, you're just limping. But we want to make sure that this time around the visit is meaningful. You know, our experience in Malawi, the actual ministers, DGs and so on, were directly involved in visiting all the projects. That we're not asking you to abandon your work and come with us. We're talking about giving some people who have been part of decision making in the processes. Sometimes you get people who do not even know why decisions were taken. Thank you. In terms of the agenda in front of me, I am forced to close the meeting. The meeting is adjourned. Thank you very much.